September 11th, 2013. It's a day that many of us are remembering where we were last year, and especially 12 years ago on this date. Never forget that, you know, those kind of dates, like the day President Kennedy was assassinated. A lot of us remember that, landing on the moon, and 9/11, a day in infamy. So hearts and thoughts go out to all those that lost loved ones in those events. Remember, our hearts and our prayers are with you. And our hearts this week on Faith and Family, that's the program. I'm Rod Zwanitzer, filling in the rest of this week for your normal host, Andy Bates, off enjoying his brand new baby boy, Oscar Benjamin Bates. So good to announce that and wish Andy and his blessings and all that. He'll be back with us next week, hopefully. And we're going to just keep week, which is back to school. Lots of people are doing that this time of the year, or they've already started. And so we're kind of going through some topics. We did separation anxiety, then parent-teacher relationships. Tomorrow we're going to do campus ministry. Friday, managing extracurricular activities. But for today, we're going to talk about bedtime, sleep, need for sleep. And we're going to welcome Dr. Jack Fiennes, a regular here on Worldwide KFUO. Before we welcome him in, we're going to encourage you to talk about this topic with us, bedtime, the change in habits and activities this time of year for children in school. You can do that by calling us in the St. Louis area, 314-821-0850, worldwide, 800-730-2727, or you can email us at kfuo@kfuo.org. We would also encourage you to check out the website of our underwriter for Faith and Family, Concordia University, Wisconsin. Just a great place. And when you go on their website, they have a virtual tour. Beautiful campus there on the shores of Lake Michigan. Great faculty, great administration, great students. So check them out. You can do that on our webpage too, kfuoam.org. Look for the rotating sponsor section, and when they come up, hit their logo, and you can go right to that too. Again, our host to talk about bedtime here and back to school is Dr. Jack Fiennes, professional counselor in Springfield, Illinois. Good morning and welcome in again, Jack.
Hey, good morning. How you doing? Oscar must be getting to be a real popular first name. Our pastor, Egg Older, our saviors here in Springfield, has a son named Oscar. So Oscar must be coming up in the books about a real popular boy's name, huh?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that in a while. And when I did, I said a great name. I think there's a place, too, you can kind of see what the most popular ones in the time are.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I always told my wife that if we ever had a third child, which is not going to happen now, but if we ever, I want to name it a Fraxat, you know. I said, I always liked that name in the Bible, you know. I think a Fraxat was a great-grandfather, great-grandson of Noah. I thought, you know, can you imagine talking about going back to school, you know, everybody has their name, and some people named Jim, and some named him Bob, and some guy says, my name's a Fraxat, you know, that's a, you know. What would the kids do with that? Going Frax or something like that? I mean, Noah was easy. Adam was easy. Abraham's easy.
Yeah.
Jacob's easy. But a Fraxat, are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah.
That stands out, you know, because you can have a used car lot, a Fraxat in a used car lot or something, you know. But
Yeah. What a name.
When was Oscar born, anyway?
Gosh, he was born a week ago, Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday, I think, a week ago yesterday.
Congratulations to the couple. That's neat. You
know? Yeah. We're so happy for them, and they're going to make great parents, and Oscar is going to be blessed. So love that kind of church growth. You know, as President Harrison says, go and fill in those pews, all you young parents out there. We love that stuff.
It's sort of a Genesis thing, you know, the multiply and fill the earth, you know. So
that's one of our jobs. I mean, so we do it gladly and raise those blessed young lives in the love and admonition of the Lord. Jack, yeah. I know you probably deal with some people that struggle with, you know, who decides for kids, you know, what they do and when they do it. And sometimes mm-hmm. parents let the child run the show. I've seen that. I'm sure you deal with that. And you know, bedtime, you know, is a difficult one at certain moments in people's lives. Children, do they need, at growing up, do they need some good sleep time, Jack, to grow healthy and also to be good students in the classroom?
Well, I think that sleep is a very interesting thing. In fact, I just did a conference with a guy named Posner, Dr. Posner, who's in the Brown University Medical School, and his whole thing is on sleep, and a thing he calls sleep efficiency. And I'd welcome anybody that wants to get deeper into the topic to Google him, Posner, Posner, and sleep, and the other one, the term sleep efficiency, because that will get into a whole bunch of data about different ages and what's required or what's good or what's bad or whatever. But the thing that I think that the real question here is cooperation, okay? Getting cooperation from whomever the child is, whatever age. And, you know, that's sometimes easy. So some kids are more cooperative than others. So if mommy says, and by the way, it's usually mommy that sets the guidelines in terms of when the sleep's going to occur. If mommy says, we're going to go to bed at, let's not pick a number, 7:30 or 8, some kids will be very cooperative and say, okay, they take have their dinner, take the bath, and go to bed. Other kids are going to be more individualistic and say, I'm too excited, or I want to read a book or watch a show or whatever, run around the house. And so the first thing that parents have to do, especially during the back-to-school time, the readjustment time, is get the cooperation of the child and work on the value of cooperating with certain rules and certain standards. Then the parent, once they can get that cooperation, once they can get that agreement with the child, and it's not that you have to bend over to the child's wills, but the child needs to realize that parents are doing this in the best interest of the child. Once you get that cooperation, then you can instantiate or instill whatever, you know, boundaries or times or whatever you want for sleep. The second thing is, bedtime is a time that some kids really enjoy, and some kids just, you know, well, that means the end of their fun, the end of their day, the end of everything because they're stuck in bed. So your first is getting the cooperation. The second is changing the name from bedtime to relax time, okay? And because we can say, you know, there are some times in our day when we eat, those are eat times. Sometimes in our day when we learn, that's school times. Sometimes in our day when we're active, and that's when you're playing soccer or hitting a wiffle ball or chasing your sister around the room or something like that. And then there's relaxed time. And relaxed time is when we lay down, sort of chill out, and hope to get to sleep. But it's where we turn everything off, say a prayer, maybe read a book, whatever the typical thing is. And then if you use those two models, you know, get them to cooperate, and you redefine it as relaxed time, it becomes a lot less scary or draconian or whatever you want to call it, than saying, okay, it's time for bed, you know.
Right.
And so you're not bending over to the child, but you're trying to get them to understand how important it is. And when I talk about cooperation, what you say is that just like your body needs food to eat, and I'm talking about generally this issue is with younger children, let's say under the age of 10, because by the time they get to be 17 or 18, trying to figure out what to do out of bed with those people is like flying to the moon. But anyway, if you get younger kids, if you say, look, your body needs sunlight, so you go out in the sun and play, but your body needs food, so we eat from time to time and water, but your body also to grow and to do well in school, you need to relax your brain. And by relaxing your brain, that means we have to have relaxed time in bed, and this is the time we're going to agree to do this, okay? So you give them a reason or a rationale for it. It's not just this is what mommy says, this is what daddy says. There's a buddy of mine, he's at University of Washington, in Washington State. His name is Ross Park, P-A-R-K-E, and again, I'd welcome people to Google his name, Ross Park. And he says, most of the time, if you can get the child the rationale, which the reason, like your body needs to grow, your brain needs to grow, your muscles need to relax, then the child will cooperate much better.
And so I would, you know, predict Jack, that if you can get children in their younger developing years to, you know, be cooperative, as you say, and think of it as really as a relaxing time that's healthy and appropriate for them. Hopefully, when they get a little older, that might still be part of their life.
Yes, and you see, what you're doing at a younger age is setting I'm using a term here, the scheme or schematic, setting the model for what they're going to be when they're older. And what you want to do is you want to give them not just boundaries, like, okay, this is what we go to bed and blah, 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 and sort of artificial, but get with specifics for that. But you want to make it part of a normal flow that, you know, when I'm tired or when I'm hungry, I eat. When I want to run, I run. When I want to relax, I relax. And I have a reason for that. I have a reason for my behavior. I have a reason for my choices. And I want to cooperate with the people around me that have pretty good ideas about my body, okay? And that would be at this early stage, my mom and my dad, you know. But, yeah, it's all part of a general theme. Now, having said that, now we open another page of the story, and this gets back to Posner's work. And, again, he's a sleep efficiency expert at Brown University in Rhode Island. And everybody that's in you and I, everybody we know of out there, has a different need for sleep in their body. Now, younger kids obviously need, you know, they say 7-8 hours of sleep a day so they can replace the cells and their brains can relax, et cetera. But as we age, as we get older, and I would say we're starting to, now we're moving to the age of 10 to 14 years of age, different people have different levels of sleep needs. Some people need the 7-8 hours. Some people need more than that. Some people need less than that. And part of the study for parents is to determine, you know, just exactly how much sleep does Betty and Johnny need. Now, it'd be nice to have them sleep all night long, but if they grow up and change into young adults and, you know, Betty only needs 6 hours of sleep and Johnny needs 10 or whatever, you're going to have to sort of adjust yourself to that sort of person that's in your house. Many times I have parents coming in to me, and the mom, let's say, sleeps 8 o'clock in the evening till 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and the dad's up all night long reading the book, and they're upset because Johnny is like the dad, doesn't need a lot of sleep, and then they're perplexed because the book says they should get 8 hours of sleep. And basically what you got is you got a clone of the dad that stays up at night, you know. So, I mean, there's got to be some adjustments in the figure, you know. You got to go with what you've got, especially as they mature, like I'd say 10 to 14 years of age.
Jack, what's going on inside the physiology of the person, the child, that would say that they need an appropriate amount of sleep?
Well, there's a lot of things that are going on. First of all, muscles need to relax, okay? Muscles use up a lot of energy, and they need a lot of, I'm not a medical doctor, but they need a lot of blood flow, and they need a lot of replacement time when the chemicals change around. Secondly, we always talk about the DNA of the body, but there's another chemical called RNA, and RNA is a chemical that floats around and actually cleans up the cells from the day. So when you sleep, the RNA actually goes about cleaning up your brain cells, your neurons, and a whole bunch of other places. So it's sort of like the garbage collector comes around and cleans it up, you know. Third, what happens is the brain, while a remarkable gift and blessing from God. In fact, there's an excellent book called Incognito that talks about the fact that even in 1 cubic centimeter of the brain, there's more connections between the neurons that God put in there than all the stars in the Milky Way galaxy. It's amazing how much the brain is. But the brain needs to relax from time to time. That's why we allow ourselves to dream. That's why we allow ourselves to chill out. And so the brain can't be on constant because it's working too much energy. And so the brain also needs to sleep so you can maintain the attention and focus and endurance and, persistence the next day, like when you're in school or work or whatever. And people that are sleep deprived, are children that cannot maintain that focus because their brain never relaxed. And in actual fact, there's sort of a joke people say, you know, if you exercise on those ellipticals or if you run a marathon or whatever, you're using a lot of energy. And, you know, and then people say, well, I read a book and that uses a lot of brain energy. And that's why, in fact, the brain does use energy. It may not be like kind of being on an elliptical, but it uses just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of connections in each cell per hour, okay, in the brain. And there's a couple trillion cells up there. So it does use a lot of energy, and therefore it needs to relax. And so you get a child who's up all night long, and their brain's not ready to focus, and you're going to have a problem in school the next day.
So would children watching a TV program or engaged in a video game still got that brain muscle working, and so it's not really the type of relaxation that the brain needs to be optimal the next day in a school environment?
Right. In actual effect, when I talked about, I said earlier today, the relaxation time, now that means exactly what the word says, relaxation. Brains interacting with the environment, like especially on the gaming things they got going on now, or anything but relaxing. I mean, I tried to play Captain America with my grandson. He's 5 years old, Jackson, the other day. And first of all, I didn't understand how to do it, which, you know, is really a disability for an adult. But the second thing is, there's no way, and we played that during the day, there's no way that could be considered relaxing. I mean, that's really sort of like playing chess on steroids. So that's not relaxing. However, reading a book or listening to music or maybe some very, very light DVD movie, not something wild and ferocious that's got pirates and all that stuff, but maybe something that's got a lot of good music, that's good. I will tell you this, I really have to be careful about promoting anything here, but there's a channel on TV that has a nighttime system for kids. There's a Sprout channel, and there's also another channel that has lullabies on. It's a music channel. And when you get younger children, and I mean, you know, even up to the age of 5 and 6, you could pop those babies on, and there's music and really more what I want to call somnolent, which means sleep-producing kind of behavior on there that helps chill them out. And therefore, it's not like gaming, and it's not like watching a TV show that's engaging. It sort of calms them down. I will tell you that I'm shut up about this, but I will tell you, there was a children's television workshop put out a thing about Elmo's bedtime, and I even watched it with my own grandkids. It actually woke them up more, because Elmo, in the very first few minutes of it, actually went to sleep, and then Elmo dreamed, and when Elmo was dreaming, he was dreaming all kinds of wild, fantastic stuff, riding trains, flying jets, and that woke the kids back up again.
Too stimulating stuff, what Elmo was dreaming.
I left myself my lamb. They almost got me excited.
I know my dreams do me too. So could we put this analogy out there, Jack, that this relaxation for the brain is kind of like, you know, when I know when I go and work out with weights or that with the trainer, he tells me, now, you know, Rod, we have to, you can't do this, these exercise, these muscles for a day or two, because your muscles need to recover. The brain, you're saying the brain's kind of like that. It needs to recover. It needs to kind of recharge, regroup, so it can.
Right, exactly. It needs, chemically it does, okay? That's what sleep does. It chemically, you know, causes it to clean up. Secondly, what happens is the dreaming states, when we dream, they tend to help calm the brain down and chill it out and give us usually something positive to think about. And third, you know, basically the body itself basically relaxes, and your brain relaxes, and it gains its energy for the focus the next day. Because I can't overemphasize the fact that even in reading the word cat, C-A-T, or dog, or reading a sentence like cat meows, dog barks, your brain is firing out so many different things at once. You're thinking of pictures of cats. You're thinking about your dog. You're thinking about the last time a dog barked. You know, there's so much collateral stuff going on. It uses tons of energy. And that's not even getting to the fact of memory work of catechism class, mathematics, and trying to figure out who Christopher Columbus was, and trying to learn how to bake a cookie or whatever is going on. You know?
Right. Jack, is there anything to that, you know, and I used to hear this, that it's important the amount of sleep that you get prior to maybe midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, as opposed to, you know, sleeping after midnight. Is there any truth to that?
Not really. Those are, you got to realize our clocks are artificial objects. Okay, we designed the clock because no, way back in Rome, somebody said noon was the sun was over the top of it, so he said. Now the Roman word, Latin word, was nones, which means nine, which means noon, and so that became noon, and midnight became midnight. I mean, I think it's true that we should, as the sun goes down, it's a perfect what do you want to call it, a perfect icon for learning how to get the relaxed time in. But I think that the important thing is for adults anyway, and again, we go back to positive work, everybody's got to figure out how much sleep they need. And you can do this because when an adult gets tired, that's when, as Posner says, quote unquote, sleep will find you. You know, by the way, sleeping, I want to make sure you understand this, is the one human endeavor a human can't choose to do. I mean, you can choose to exercise, you can choose to eat a hamburger, you can choose to walk down the street, you can choose to read the Bible, you can choose to pray, you can choose to do anything. But if you say, I'm forcing myself to go to sleep, I'm going to sleep, you can't do that. It's when you really are ready to go to sleep, okay, at least as an adult. So it is true that it's better to get a good night's sleep, but every human has got different levels. And some people go to bed before midnight, some people go to bed after midnight. As long as their body gets the required amount of sleep per night that they need, that's what's important.
Is it important at all, Jack, that our children get good uninterrupted sleep too? That they're
oh,
not.
Yes.
Yeah. So that undisturbed sleep would be important too.
Oh yeah. I mean, whatever you can do, and is try to chill out the whole evening from the time they have that relaxation time on. So this is not the time for mom and dad, once Johnny goes to bed, for mom and dad to get in a fight over the taxes and start yelling, or not the time to bring the new puppy in when it's barking, or not the time to try to do those home projects where dad's trying to fix the plumbing and all of a sudden water shoots out over the house. I mean, it's also not the time to have friends and neighbors come over and start having the Domino's pizzas and beers and making noises because the kids are going to want to get up. So uninterrupted is uninterrupted, okay? Remember, the human body and brain was designed by God as a sensory organism. It means it picks up, we're like little radars and sonars. We pick up on anything. So, and especially if we're a young child and we don't want to sleep, or one of those children don't cooperate very well, you'll be looking for all kinds of reasons. There are all kinds of interruptions or distractions to get you out of that bed.
Sure. So that kind of a mind and a energy level is going to be stimulated by all kinds of sounds and everything else, aren't they? Anything excuse
to
get out of the bed or just sit there and be awake.
Exactly. And if you put the child to bed and all of a sudden the child lays down and half an hour or 40 minutes later, you turn the lights on in the hall and you go, you know, typing away or doing something, making noise in the other room, the kid's going to wake up, you know?
Yeah.
And then here comes the cooperation thing. Why is it you can be up and I can't, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And boy,
right.
Good luck, you know?
Yeah. Let's get into this topic because some of the parents might be struggling with this right now, where the strategy and the applicability if parents allow their kids to have different bedtime hours in the vacation summer months, and then when we hit Labor Day or whenever they're back to school, all of a sudden the parents want to shift that dramatically. Is that a good idea? How do you wrestle with that? And so we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Faith and Family. And this week we're talking about back to school today, the need for sleep so that our children can be the very best that they can in the learning environment. And we're talking with Dr. Jack Fiennes, a professional counselor there in Springfield, Illinois area. So join us here on Faith and Family, underwritten by our good friends Concordia University, Wisconsin. Come right back, and we'll be back here to talk about bedtime on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The abortion industry is in trouble. It's hemorrhaging abortionists. As the old bottom feeders of the medical establishment retire or die, there are fewer who are willing to take their place. This trend is not exclusive to the United States. The abortion industry in Canada, Italy, and the United Kingdom are all scrounging for more abortionists. California is trying to get around the shortage of abortionists by allowing midwives, nurses, and physician assistants to perform abortions. If this law passes in California, they'll join four other states where the practice is permitted or not banned. The abortion industry provides very poor quality of care now. If this continues, it'll mean many more babies being killed and scores of additional women maimed by unqualified hacks.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
The Lutheran doctrine of vocation is foundational to the variety of topics on the weekend Studio A program. Heard Saturdays from 1 to 3 Central Time, we discuss everything from theology and culture, history, politics, service, and current affairs, and how we as Christians are called not only to live in, but to be an influence upon this world. That's the Studio A program, Saturdays from 1 to 3 Central, right here on KFUO Radio.
Listeners from around the globe hear the Christ-centered message of worldwide KFUO.
I am from the province of Ontario in Canada. I listen to your station, KFUO, on my laptop at work.
With today's internet technologies, you can listen on your computers, laptops, and Wi-Fi radios.
26 states are listening to us, and 14 countries, Israel is listening. Switzerland, Kenya, and even Italy.
You can listen on the go, even through your car radios, with your smartphones, podcast players, and tablets.
Hi. Wanted to call and say thanks for broadcasting worship services. I'm driving home, about a 45-minute drive. Wanted to hear something uplifting and soothing, and flip the dial, and worship service is just exactly what I needed.
Listen worldwide to the messenger of good news. KFUO at KFUO.org.
Airline pilot Steve Scheibner says he was a part-time pastor on this date 12 years ago.
My other job was flying for American Airlines, and when I wasn't flying, I was pastoring and counseling at the church.
But on September 11th, 2001, a pilot with more seniority took the assignment that he had volunteered for.
I was originally scheduled to be the co-pilot on American Airlines Flight 11, the first flight that was hijacked on that day.
And the first to crash into the World Trade Center in New York, killing everyone aboard. Why was his life spared?
For me, it was clearly the hand of God. And, it's hard to answer the question, why would God take one and leave another? All I know is that being the guy who was left behind, I have to live with a sense of urgency because I know I'm living on borrowed time.
As a Christian, Scheibner believes Jesus took his place by dying on the cross for his sins, so
I know what it's like to have somebody die in my place, not once, but twice.
He now heads a ministry called Character Health. I'm Steve Coleman.
Prices are rising, the devil's to blame. Moving the mountain that got in the way. Rebels and mutants to find a plan. Deciding the fate of the family of man.
A little music there to wake us up, because we're talking about bedtime and sleep habits for children's education, and we're doing that with Dr. Jack Fiennes, Springfield, Illinois counselor. I'm your host, Rod Zwanitz, so we're inviting you to call in with your comments, questions about bedtime and sleep, 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us, shoot us an email at kfuo@kfuo.org. Jack, we got a caller here. Marilyn wants to talk about, are you ready for this? Red blood cells and sleep survey. Marilyn, listening there in Granite City, Illinois. Welcome to Faith and Family.
Good morning to both of you. Dr. Fiennes, I want to know, and this is off the record, sort of, are you the absent-minded professor that Paul used to always call?
I didn't hear that. Say it again, please.
Paul Clayton, when he was a host on the KFUO, And it just seemed to me like that was the name that he used. I apparently you weren't.
No, so Marilyn, that was Dr. Bob Weiss.
It was that who
the engineer
was
telling me that, so
well,
no.
I made an error.
Yeah.
My apology.
No problem.
Most interesting conversation. One of the things that I found out when I was teaching, took a survey of my fifth graders, and those who, in fact, had regular sleep time, and most of them getting 9 to 10 hours sleep a night, were my better students. Now, I don't mean that they were the brightest, but they were good. They were attentive. They were good at what they did. And those who, well, I had some of them tell me they didn't go to bed until midnight because they were staying up watching blah, blah, blah. And I mean, the proof was in the pudding right there. I mean, it certainly was for me, but I could tell this. The thing I wanted to say about red blood cells, and I know this necessarily can't be told to the very young children, but certainly the upper middle graders as well as high school age children, that this, in fact, is when the bone marrow makes these red blood cells that carry their oxygen. And, you know, it's vitally important that they have it. And that you said on the brain, how fabulously interesting. And sometimes I wish that I could turn off my brain because it just seems like it keeps going all night long. But at any rate, it doesn't turn off. And thank you, Lord, for that because I'm still alive and he awakened me today. My blessings to all of you there, KFUO. I just love. And my apology, Dr. Ryan. It was Dr. Weiss. Bye now.
Thank you, Marilyn, listening there in Illinois. So
what she said has got all kinds of truth to it. As I said before, during the time of sleep, and I want to get to another real quick point here, during the time of sleep, the body does repair itself. I talked about the body's various chemicals going around and cleaning out things and repairing things. Red blood cells is indeed one of it. It goes into production for all those things it doesn't do when you're awake. One of the things that also comes with sleep is stress endurance. If you don't sleep, then the stress that we normally have the next day, we'll always have stress. If you're a first grader, a 90-year-old, you're going to have stress of some type. Your body's less resilient to stress reactions, and so when you get stressed out, your immunological system, there's a thing called psychoneuroimmunology by a guy named Ader. And then the more relaxed you are, the less stressed you are, the more you can endure the next day's stresses. So even if you're not, even if it's not a learning thing, if it's just a stress thing that's going on, like mom and dad are arguing, or there's a separation, or there's financial or job issues, or whatever, you can handle it better as a kid or as an adult if you get sleep.
That's so true, isn't it, Jack? You can even feel yourself on edge when you haven't had a lot of sleep. So,
exactly.
stressor comes into your life, you just don't react as well. That's a good point.
Yeah, see, for example, I was in the hospital a couple weeks ago with some cancer surgery, and I'm a pretty active guy, got up, walked around, all that kind of jazz. But the doctors cautioned me that, you really want to get out of here, you need to relax a little bit. So, I mean, so back to my chair, back to bed, they stuck me, And the point is, because they need the body to relax, the mind to relax, so all those cells get to meet each other, grow up, and connect, and so I can become more vibrant. So besides all of the educational ramifications and all of the concentration issues and et cetera, the body and the physiological issues, the body needs sleep to get rid of stress and to develop an ability to resist and endure the stressors that are the nature of this world. I mean, we're going to all run into it. It doesn't matter what it is. And so as we relax at night and breathe deeply and chill out, our parasympathetic nervous system kicks in, which is a relaxing one, chills things out, everybody calms down, and you get ready for the next day.
Jack, she brought up a point for probably just about us adults, I would think, that, you know, there's some age in your life where, as Marilyn was saying, you know, your mind wants to go 100 miles an hour and you don't, can't seem to slow it down or shut it off some nights, get to sleep. Any advice there?
Well, it depends. Some of us, and she brought up Bob Weiss, which is a real good friend of mine, and we used to do a lot of stuff with Paul Clayton on the radio, and Bob Weiss and I are the kind of brains that do tend to stay up and think and sometimes think too much. And so, as I said earlier, by positive research, some of us actually need more sleep than others and some don't. But there's a difference between somebody who's normally up at night thinking thoughts and reading stuff and maybe trying to do some research and people that are doing that because of anxiety and, you know, a mania or whatever, but agitation. If you're doing it because you've just picked up a really good book, and I'm reading one book by David Rockefeller right now, and it's a really cool book. It's got a lot of interesting stuff in about American history, and I sometimes can't put it down. That's one level of being up at night in your mind working.
Okay? Sure, sure.
If, on the other hand, you're all agitated about bills or jobs or sin or death or, you know, your relationships or your kids or whatever, and what's keeping you up is not your mind racing or your mind working on sounding out information, but you're worried about illness or worried and agitated stuff, that's anxiety. And at that point, you need to maybe talk to your doctor or your pastor or somebody you know in counseling, or maybe go take some Benadryl or something to try to chill that out, so you can, because you do not want to be up for reasons other than, you know, stuff that's sort of interesting to you, like reading a book or,
yeah,
you know, whatever you may be doing. So it's not so much if you're up and your mind's going, it's why it's going and what it's going on. You know?
Yeah, well said. So we have to differentiate what's keeping you awake, and that can be, you know, symptomatic of needing some help. Now, we were just before the break there, Jack. We were talking about, you know, the parent strategy about, do I change the kids' sleep patterns during vacations and all that? And I was going to have you comment on that, because in prep for today, I looked at a list from the Cleveland Clinic, and they talk about here at healthy sleep habits for children of maintaining a consistent one. Both time to go to sleep and wake up should be about the same every day of the week, regardless if it's school or not. I will read here, consistent wake-up time sets the stage for the rest of the day and allows adequate sleep pressure to build up by late evening to allow for a quicker sleep onset and an appropriate time at the night. So not only, they're suggesting not only a consistent time to shut down and relax the brain, but a get-up time, too, for our young kids. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that, first of all, we got to look at the whole of the German system, like the whole context of the thing. Well, there's two different levels of vacation. One level of vacation is if the kids are out of school and mom and dad are still working and everybody's basically in town. The other is if they're on vacation, which is when they're on Yellowstone watching the bears and watching the geysers, okay?
Right.
And because if mom and dad are more relaxed and sort of staying up and taking walks and, you know, blah, 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 it's really hard to get those kids to understand why is it you guys can have all this fun and we're sitting here stuck in the pillow again, you know? But having said that, I think, again, that gets down to cooperation, the definition of things, that even though we're on vacation, and mom and dad aren't going to get up at 7 in the morning, go off to work the next morning, we're all going to have relaxation time. I will tell you that consistency is an extreme, extreme rule of thumb. I mean, not so you become draconian and you're so stiff on it that you can't change it, but consistency is a good theme for the family. Consistency is good about everything, okay? Whether it's go to church on Sundays, have certain meals, eat certain foods, consistency and cooperation in terms of sleep is also good. So, technically speaking, if little Johnny, I use Johnny, I guess, but a little Johnny or Betty are supposed to go to bed at 8 o'clock during the school week when they're in school, it really isn't such a bad idea for little Johnny and Betty to go to bed at 8 o'clock when they're, you know, on the school vacation. It you know, it's a whole lot less hard, or that's bad language, much easier. Let them be consistent and realize that when 8 o'clock hits or whatever number you pick, it's time for bath, bed, and relaxation. And so, you know, you don't have to separate out this world into like, okay, starting in June, you can stay up all night long, but starting in September, you're in bed at 8, you know. And because then you got the argument, you know, the counter argument, especially when you get a smart grandchild, and not a smart alecky, but a smart grandchild, say, well, if my body needs all that relaxation in April, why doesn't it need it now in June, okay? And then your rationale goes out the window. So
yeah.
if you really tell the child that, you know, whether it's brain cleaning or muscle relaxing or stress induction or whatever it may be that your body needs, you know, during the school year, it also should need it during vacation time. I mean, that's almost as bad as illogical as saying, okay, during school days, we're not going to eat potato chips for lunch because they're bad for you. But in July, we're going to eat as many potato chips as you want, you know. Pretty soon, the kid's going to say, really? That's special. And you just lost your argument. So,
some really good advice here from Dr. Jack Fiennes, talking about back-to-school bedtime habits. You can join in on this with a question or comment for Dr. Fiennes, 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can even email us, and we'd glad to get those on to KFUO at KFUOAM.org. Jack, I was going to mention, too, that this Cleveland Clinic Healthy Sleep Habits also says, and I think this one is good for people of all ages, says, make sure your kid is getting a good amount of daily exercise as a part of his routine. Incorporating this as a daily habit at a young age will help establish it as a daily lifelong. And we all know that if you exercise the body as well, it really does help sleep, doesn't it? And I know with me, when I exercise faithfully, regularly, I think better. And maybe that's because my body does want the relaxation. And so this cleansing and healing that you're talking about can happen too and be beneficial all my waking time.
Well, if you take a look at even, to go back to Genesis, there was work involved in the garden.
So, right. Before the fall, even, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not necessarily, there weren't necessarily elliptical machines and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there was some weightlifting going on there. I jokingly tell people I lift weights twice a day. I lift 173 pounds out of bed in the morning and put it back in bed at night. So that's my weightlifting. But the one thing that the exercise, walking, it doesn't matter whatever you do, does is it tends to reduce the agitation and the stress and the irritability and the whatever it is that's going on in your life. So therefore, part of the reason why you are able to sleep better at night if you do some kind of physical activity. I do a lot of we've got a lot of trees around our house and a little creek in the back, so I like to walk around and do that kind of stuff. But if you do that kind of thing, what happens is your body is less stressed, less tense by the time you go to bed. So all that agitation that would normally be on your back, you know, literally, and be in your head, is out because you chilled it out by getting that out of your system. You know, I got friends that do, well, Bob Weiss does this. He does a lot of bicycle riding. I got friends that do, you know, 20, 40, 50 miles every once in a while get on a bike and go bananas on it. And those people tend to be much less, much easier for them to sleep at night than if you don't do anything, you know. And I think that part of the stress thing, or part of the exercise thing, is not so much that your muscles are tired, okay, although they are, but that what the deal is that you've allowed your body to get the stress and tension out, and so therefore when you're ready to do that relaxation time, it's good. It's time to chill out. The one thing you want to be careful of children, though, and I caution this, is it's sort of can be a reverse thing that can occur. If they're out in the backyard doing a lot of heavy-duty exercise, like playing soccer or basketball or running down the street, and then you try to put them in bed, in actual effect, in young kids, it tends to excite their body, and so they got to chill out from that exercise, okay, chill out from the physical activity. So really, you really shouldn't have a soccer game an hour before bed, you know, because that's not going to work, you know.
Yeah. That makes sense, doesn't it? And so you got to have a cool down period for both your body and your mind and all of that. Good advice. How about
I had a friend of mine, by the way, that I thought it would he liked to jog, so he'd go out and jog like a mile and a half, and pretty soon his son was jogging with him. Well, when he got home, the
the dad was tired, relaxed. The kid was all wound up. So he's going to jog in the morning,
Yeah, that can affect people very different. How about the bedroom environment? Anything that's important to talk about there for helping our kids get the amount of sleep that they really need to be good students?
Well, I tell you, first of all, the bedroom is a kid's castle, per se. So it should be a safe and secure place. I mean, I know we have some people that moms and dads aren't always getting along and arguing and stuff, and so, and there may be different financial situations, but it really should be the place of the child's identity. As if you got soft animals or, the pillows or his Avenger characters or whatever, all that kind of stuff should be there. But, and during the relaxation time, we do not get toys out. No toys when it's time for relaxation. The second thing is, not a lot of lights, okay? They should have some. My grandson has this turtle that would light up in his room that would sit on the floor, and it would have like, 150 little holes in it with lights that would come up, and you could see these. It would be like the constellations of the stars on his ceiling, and that would rotate around slowly and play some quiet music. Something like that's fine, okay? But, lights off to a certain extent as best you can. If you want to put some slow, music on that's quiet, that's fine. But nothing exciting, nothing that, again, like the gaming, all that kind of stuff. When it's time for bed, it's time for bed, and the environment closes down. But, you can have religious symbols in the room, crosses, a picture of a good shepherd, being Jesus, et cetera. Those kind of things are great. But try not to have the environment stimuli that's going to keep the kid awake.
Very good. Now, how about the practice? I know my parents were good about this too, of maybe having a devotional time towards the end of this, getting ready to go to sleep.
Oh, wow, that's tremendous. Because first of all, obviously devotional time and prayer time is exactly what we want for the spiritual growth of our children and us. But, you get some lessons in there and stuff, but remember, tied to that is a prayer. And the prayer, you got the Lord's Prayer, which the Lord taught us gave it to us when we were all stressed out in the Sermon on the Mountain, that kind of stuff. He said, Lord, teach us how to pray, and so he gave the Lord's Prayer. Prayers can close the day off, too, okay? So you can say to God, say to Jesus, take all the troubles I've had today and put them away. Let me know you're going to take care of my issues, whether it's issues at school or issues at work or issues with the other children in school or whatever. Help me learn this and help me learn. You can take it to God and have God close off the day for you. So all the little troubles, whatever issues on the kid's mind, okay, the children's mind, you can bring it right to Jesus, and that's sort of an apostrophe to the day. It ends the day, okay? And then, and so whatever is bedeviling him, literally, or her, is brought in the devotional time. So devotional time is not just didactic, where you maybe read the story of the Good Samaritan or the Prodigal Son or whatever, or read a psalm, which is always good. Psalms are cool, or read John 14, something like that, Romans 8, and Luke 24. There's a whole bunch of different possibilities there. But what you do is you bring the prayer out as the issue where your last comment or your last communication during the day is you talking to God saying, take care of some of these troubles before we wake me up tomorrow morning.
Sure. The idea is that, as some always prayed, now I lay me down to rest, I pray the Lord,
my soul to keep.
My soul to keep and, all of that. And so that's the great thought, isn't it? Give it all to the Lord. Let me have a restful night that I might wake to serve and love you tomorrow morning.
There was a really good psychologist at one point, a very well-known guy. His name was Martin Luther, had a pretty good practice in Germany there for a while. And he wrote a lot of stuff about a prayer. He had a lot of prayers, a lot of stuff for families and people about what to say at night and what prayers to say. And I think they call it the Office of the Compline. I'm not a theologian, but something like that. Where
sure.
He had a lot of material there that you could probably borrow. I mean, it's not copywritten.
Right.
You could probably borrow for your home. And have him go through those vespers and and sort of maybe say some of those things so it doesn't become so rote. And you can just explain to your child why we do this. When we shut our eyes, we let God's eyes never shut. They're always there. So he can watch over us and take care of us during the night and also take care of all our issues and wake us up the next morning.
That wonderful stuff to close your eyes with. And I appreciate that, Jack, that you're sharing a great wealth of resource that Luther, that had pretty good counseling service going on there in Europe.
I've done a lot of, now there's other guys, real guys, Chemnitz and Melanchthon, and those guys that are out there, but honestly, Martin Luther was really with it in terms of appraising people and getting them in the context of their lives and really applying God's word to people's lives. I mean, he was a great theologian, okay?
Yeah.
He also was a great practical theologian and pragmatically could get into why you do what you do and how God interacts with you on a daily basis. And part of that is relaxing and chilling out and letting God take over, okay? And if anybody knew about that, that was old Martin. So.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I like where you were going with that, Jack, that Luther was just a genius at getting himself and the rest of us to get our mind off of us and our issues and get it onto Christ, you know?
Yep.
Flip that switch, get on that good side where you're looking to Jesus and his merits and his blessings. And that's such good advice. And Luther was you know, just premier on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think sometimes instead of us getting all scattered on a lot of other techniques and stuff, and I think there's good techniques out there. I think maybe if we take a look at what he wrote and some of the books he wrote and also some of the theology and also some of the, like I said, the Vespers and that kind of stuff, I think it's not a bad idea to start to use that at home, you know?
Yeah.
You can have a little song before devotions, sing a little song, have a little reading, and then have a prayer and let Jesus take over the night.
Jack, we've covered a lot, but I just maybe wanted to close with this. What advice would you have for the parent out there that's really struggling now that school is back in session and they're noticing that their little Susie, their little Johnny, maybe just isn't that cooperative as we began this program with, getting this good rest for their brain and their body and their soul. What would you recommend some things if a parent out there is not getting the type of cooperation they would know they need with their child?
First of all, don't identify yourself like you're a failure as a parent, okay? You have 365 days a year, and you got these kids for 18 years. That's a lot of opportunities to get cooperation, okay? Number two, don't ever take it inside yourself. I mean, number two, with the child, sit down and incrementally develop cooperation about other things besides bedtime. Cooperation maybe about when they eat, cooperation about when they want to play with their friends, cooperation about some of their interests they want to do, what books they want to pick, what movies they want to see. If you can begin cooperation as a behavior on other things besides the sleep area, okay, besides the sleep area, it's much easier to generalize it and transfer it into the sleep area because you simply say, hey, we've been pretty good about picking movies together, picking times to do other things. You wanted a peanut butter sandwich for lunch, which was a great idea, so I made you one, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then you build it up into the theme, okay, let's also decide this is a good idea to go to sleep so you can be ready for tomorrow morning.
Excellent. So you're kind of conditioning them in a way to be ready to work with you on this bedtime, let's relax issue.
Yes, you're not a drill instructor, you're a mentor.
Yeah, and so maybe even a good one to build that cooperation is, hey, let's you and I work together to design and furnish your bedroom the way you want it.
Exactly.
Great. Jack Fiennes, we've had so much fun today talking about sleep. And so thanks for being such a great guest. Thanks for being such a great friend of Worldwide KFUO. Richest blessings to you up there in Springfield, Illinois.
God's blessings to everyone.
Thanks, Jack. Join us tomorrow when we will talk with Pastor Marcus Sill about campus ministry here, back to school with Faith and Family here on Worldwide KFUO.